recognized as murder. There was assisted suicide. A terminally ill person is suffering and wants to end it, and you help the person do so. The practice was legal in some places and unlawful in others. Again, someone was dead. Unlike the accidental death, the death was intentional, but it was not the same as murder, because it had been the choice of the deceased to end his life. There was justifiable homicide, the best example of which was self-defense. There you intended to harm another, but the law said you had the right to defend yourself. There were varying degrees of murder. If you were negligent in causing that car accident or dropping your weapon and someone died, you could be charged with involuntary manslaughter. A spontaneous bludgeoning, resulting in death, could end with the perpetrator being charged with the more serious crime of voluntary manslaughter. Second-degree murder, a close cousin to voluntary manslaughter, had the element of malice aforethought and possibly recklessness, but not the additional one of premeditation or lying in wait, as it was often called. Decker sipped his beer as he went through the legal requirements of intentionally ending the life of another. The last one was the worst of all, in his estimation. First-degree murder almost always required the specific elements of willfulness, premeditation, and malice aforethought. You wanted someone dead for your benefit, and you laid out a plan in advance to make sure that death happened. The harshest legal consequences of all were reserved for these heinous acts. Going after these types of criminals was what Decker had done for almost his entire adult life. He took another sip of beer. "I catch killers. It's really the only thing I'm good at." He stared out at the night sky over northwestern Pennsylvania, near the Ohio border, in a place called Barronville. He heard it had once been a thriving mill and mining town, owing its very existence to the eponymous Barron family, which had dug the mines and built the mills. However, those engines of commerce were long since gone. What was left wasn't much. Yet people seemed to be getting by in a variety of ways, and with varying degrees of success. A similar pronouncement could be made about many places across America. Inside the house, Alex Jameson was sharing a glass of white wine with her older sister, Amber, and talking to her precocious, soon-to-be 6-year-old niece, Zoe. Decker and Jameson were here on vacation from solving crimes as part of a special task force at the FBI back in Washington. Decker had been reluctant to go with Jameson, but their boss, Special Agent Bogart, had insisted that he take some type of leave. And when Jameson had suggested that he accompany her on a visit to her sister, Decker couldn't think of a single other place to go. "So here I am." He took another sip of his beer and studied his size 14 feet. When they had arrived here, introductions had been made, hugs given, pleasantries exchanged, bags put away, and Jameson had given out housewarming gifts to her sister and niece, because Amber and her family had only recently moved here. Dinner was prepared and eaten, but long before then, Decker had run out of things to say and ideas of what would be socially acceptable to do. And that's when Jameson, who knew him perhaps better than anyone else, had discreetly suggested that he take his beer and his awkwardness outside, so the sisters could catch up in the way that women often did while no men were around. The social awkwardness had not always been a part of him. The 6'5", 300-pound plus, well, maybe more than simply plus, Decker, a former professional football player, had once been outgoing, gregarious, a bit goofy even, fun-loving, and always ready with a quip. Then had come the vicious blindside hit to the head on the football field that had changed his life and who he was forever. The resulting brain trauma had almost killed him, and while he had survived, the blow had forced his brain to rewire itself to allow healing to occur. This process had left two distinct marks on him. One was hyperthymesia, or perfect recall. Those possessing such a condition often could apply it only to autobiographical information, and often had below average memory capacities in other aspects of their lives. But not Decker. It was as though someone had placed a camera with a limitless capacity to take pictures in his head. He was the memory man, unable to forget anything. Decker had found it a decidedly mixed blessing. The second result of the hit was his developing synesthesia,